Thanks very much for the invitation. I always enjoy coming up here and chatting with some old friends, some of whom I haven't seen in a long time. See, I thought I knew what to do with the stick, but apparently I don't. All right. Very dangerous. I should not be trusted. Very good. Off to an excellent start. All right. So today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about WIMPs. And so this is pretty established physics, but I think it's useful to take stock of where we are and really to understand how squeezed this paradigm is getting, and is it time to sort of move on and think about other interesting possibilities? So I'm going to talk to you about this in the context of two separate ideas. One is with my two former students, Jack Carney and Nick Orlovsky, and then the second story is with Nasheen Shah, who's at Wayne State now, and Stefan Vogel, who's in Germany. All right, so the story, as I said, the first part of the talk is going to be discussing what I call WIMPs with a capital W, where I take the W in WIMP very seriously. So when people talk about WIMPs, generically what they mean is that it has a weak scale cross-section. So that's the right thing to get you the right thermal history. But you can be more serious than that. You can say that, well, we know things that are at the weak scale. They're called the W and the Z and the Higgs, right? And so if you want to get a weak scale cross-section, one perfectly excellent way to get a weak scale cross-section is to actually use those bosons. And so I'm going to be talking about that kind of WIMP, the WIMP where I really mean weak. And I'm going to talk about this particularly very briefly only in the context of the Higgs, but with a little more detail in the context of the Z, because you'll see that that story turns out to be a little bit more interesting from the current experimental picture. And then when we go through this story, we're going to see that the best way to understand perhaps the best benchmark model for this is something which is called singlet doublet dark matter. So some of you, I think, probably know that story, but I'll review it briefly here. And I'll try and argue for you why this, if you're talking about the benchmark for WIMP with the capital W, this is really the thing you should be talking about. And so if you're worried about the status of the WIMP, I think that's the model that you should be worried about. So that's what I'm going to try to argue for you. And then after I have this discussion, then I'll move on to discuss a co-annihilation story. All right. So the main story that I'm going to be spending a lot of time talking about is direct detection. And so the basic idea, dark matter comes in, it scatters off of a nucleus. And in the case of xenon, it's a two-stage detector, so you can look for signals both from scintillation and ionization, and you look at the ratio of those two things to help you isolate the nuclear recoil. And that allows you to place relatively strong bounds. I'll discuss why I say they are strong in a moment. With the peak sensitivity coming at sort of tens of GeV, roughly where the dark matter mass is close to matching the mass of the nucleus that you're recoiling off of, and then at large mass, you just lose linearly because there are fewer dark matter particles to come and hit your detector. And then at the low masses, that's where your energy thresholds for your experiment are turning on. You could think about this as a ping pong ball coming and hitting your bowling ball. It's not going to impart much energy to the bowling ball, and therefore, you eventually lose the sensitivity at the low mass. All right. So just as a very quick reminder, there's by now literally a textbook calculation of how much dark matter we expect. So what are the steps? You solve the Boltzmann equation in an expanding universe. Here's an equilibrium curve for the co-moving number density of the dark matter. And once you get well above the mass of the dark matter, right, so this is cooler going this way. And once you get well above the mass of the dark matter, this drops exponentially. Annihilations would like you to keep hugging this curve. However, eventually the expansion of the universe is sufficient, and the dark matter is sufficiently dilute that dark matter can't find its buddy anymore to keep hugging this curve, and you freeze out. And so the stronger you interact, the longer you hold this curve. And so if you interact very strongly, you have a very low abundance. You interact less strongly, then you have a much higher abundance. So what's the right abundance? Well, it turns out that if you estimate just by dimensional analysis the abundance to be something like an alpha squared over an m squared, And you compute parametrically what you expect the abundance to be. It turns out roughly to be the geometric mean of the temperature of maturation equality, which is roughly EV-ish, and the Planck mass. So we have EV, we have 10 to the 19 GeV, and sort of what's called the WIMP miracle is that you take these two very disparate scales, you take the geometric mean, it turns out to be a scale that we already know is important for particle physics, the weak scale, and that's what people call the WIMP miracle. I call it the WIMP pretty good coincidence because, in fact, we don't know what is this alpha. This is sort of good to roughly a couple of orders of magnitude, right? So very roughly, you could have expected it to lie anywhere on some logarithmic scale, and you've sort of pinned it down by this kind of argument to within a couple of decades of mass, and that happens to be close to a scale that we know about. So that's roughly what I call the WIMP pretty good coincidence. And so if you take this hint seriously, then you start thinking about dark matter that has the weak interactions. So again, this is a nice picture I stole from Josh. So you have these two very disparate scales, one here, and lo and behold, you get a scale that's about 60 TeV, absent the alpha, and then you say, hey, wait a second, on this very large set of scales, I lie close to the weak scale. All right, so as I said, what I want to talk about, at least for the first half of the talk, is WIMP with the capital W. So here, this is the case where the cosmology and the direct detection, they're really honestly controlled by interactions with the gauge and standard model, the gauge bosons and the standard model Higgs bosons. And there are examples of this. So examples of this include the singlet double model we'll talk later. Basically, Split-Suzy is another example of this kind of story. And so I want to discuss how this works. Okay, so one of the crucial observations for this story is going to be you're going to have interactions with the Higgs, and if you have interactions with the Higgs to determine your relic density, so if you're annihilating this way, this is the usual crossing symmetry story. You annihilate this way, that gives you a spin-independent cross-section. You annihilate this way through the Z, and you get a spin-dependent cross-section.
Why is it called nu?
Sorry, this you can call it chi. This was
you knew Higgs.
Sorry. This is chi. Let's go X. It's X, and in fact, I may even switch the notation later. Yes, it's not. It's not a standard. This is not the standard model neutrino at all. When we were writing it down, it's going to have the quantum numbers of a lepton doublet is the reason. But
that's okay.
All right, so very roughly, let's just talk first about the spin-independent scattering. So if it were a Dirac dark matter coupling to the Z, then that turns out to be, it shouldn't be there, the cross-section is roughly like a few times 10 to the minus 40 centimeters, so it's like sitting somewhere up here. That's been excluded since I was a baby. And so the simple way to forbid this is to make the chi-majorana, in which case this spinner combination exactly vanishes. And so then you don't have the large spin-independent coupling. But if you have a coupling to the Higgs, which is about a tenth, which is roughly what I would want.
Making it Majorana means killing half of the Dirac spinner, right?
Another way to say,
so
yeah.
You don't have to kill it, you can just lift it, right?
This is right, this is called the inelastic dark matter, right? So this is another possibility. So you could get rid of it altogether, or if the splitting is bigger than 100 keV, that also does the job. Yeah. And in fact, you know, Majorana is that, right? I mean, it's, you know, this in SUSY, it's the original inelastic dark matter. The splittings are, you know, tens or hundreds, as you know. I mean, it's tens or hundreds of GeV instead of 100 keV, but all you need is 100 keV, roughly. Yeah. Good. But for the Higgs, if the coupling is about a tenth, which is roughly what you want for getting the right relic density, you get cross sections that are sort of roughly in the ballpark of what's being probed now, and I would say, in fact, it's getting quite squeezed by the fact that the limits are getting stronger and stronger. This tension for sort of order hundreds of GeV stuff between this rough schematic line that I drew and these bounds is telling you that if you're trying to set your relic abundance via annihilation through that Higgs that I showed here, right, this is starting to get problematic. So this is this statement that the Higgs portal is starting to be squeezed now by direct detection. All right.
But even more so by the invisible Higgs width.
Well, for the invisible Higgs width for down here, right? But once you get above 60, then you have to rely on the direct detection. Yeah. All right, so if the Higgs is a problem, let's talk about coupling to the Z. So that's another possibility. So you can ask, just write this down in the effective field theory language. And so you say, I like to couple my dark matter to the Z. What should I write down? This is the operator that I should write down. You put in the Higgs VEVs, that gives you the coupling to the Z of this size, right? So this is how you would write this down. If you do this in a gauge invariant way, then of course, in addition to getting the coupling to the Z, you can either put in one Higgs VEV, two Higgs VEVs, or no Higgs VEVs, right? And then that will give rise to additional couplings. You'll also get a chi-chi-Z H contact interaction, and a chi-chi-Z Higgs-Higgs contact interaction. All of these should come along for the ride. And I highlight this point just because some people who wrote these down, these models originally, did not keep track of these other things. And then you find things, amplitudes that grow with energy that don't quite make sense. So you can ask in this very simple model, you only have essentially one free parameter now, right? So the only free parameter, So you have two free parameters. One is the dark matter mass, and then the other is the size of this coupling.
Yeah. Can you UV complete? Do you have UV completions of this model?
We'll talk about exactly this point in a second. Yeah. So this is. There's two questions. One is the question of the UV completion.
Yeah, but Tom gives you this and not something.
Yes. I mean, this is kind of the crucial point in a sense, which we'll talk about in 5 minutes. But in addition to the question of this UV completion. So we'll talk about it in 2 minutes. Okay, so we have the dark matter mass as a free parameter, we have this coupling as a free parameter, and then let's just ask, if I want to get the right relic density, the thermal story of the Boltzmann equation, I can just draw a curve in this plane for any given dark matter mass, there's gonna be some particular value of that coupling to the Z, which is inherited from the size of that non-renormalizable operator. And that gives me this curve that looks like this. And so there's features here which make sense, right? Here I'm sitting on the Z resonance, and so I don't need a very big coupling at all. Here's the TT bar threshold. And so then that's a case where you were, there's the P wave suppression for annihilating to the top, annihilating to the fermions. And so having a heavy fermion that you can go to means you can get by with a much smaller coupling. So that's why you have this shoulder. And these curves are just shown if you were to naively do some calculations, which other people did, where you left out some of either this contact interaction or both of the additional contact interactions, you would get curves that would be numerically different. All right, so now I want to ask. So this is, at least in principle, some benchmark model. Let's come back to the question of the UV completion in a minute. Let's just ask, if I believe this benchmark model, how can I constrain this? And so certainly one way to constrain this is already just with the direct detection, right? So if you have direct detection from a xenon experiment, the xenon experiment also has spin-dependent limits. There, the spin-dependent limits in xenon, the spin is mostly on the neutron, but this is the Z. The Z couples to protons and to neutrons, not the same, but it's a somewhat smaller coupling to the neutron than to the proton. But even so, and this is something to at least keep in mind, in the case of the Z, the bounds that you get from places like Panda X and xenon, for example, tend to be stronger for this kind of model than something like, say, Pico or Ku, where they're focusing on the coupling to the proton. So the coupling of the Z to the proton is larger, but it's compensated by the fact that those limits are not typically as strong because their targets aren't as big. So you get these bounds from from these direct detection experiments.
Sorry, yes. The dotted lines are from collider searches?
Yes, so these are some particular bounds that are coming from the CMS and Atlas, but these are these, you have to be very careful in interpreting these bounds. Yes. It's just that usual story, right, where that's a little bit.
If you just map your previous curve onto this, so where?
So yeah, so I'll show you that in a second. So yes, for sure I will show that. So we have that. There's another constraint, at least in principle. So I'm just going to go through the constraints, and then I'll show you the summary. So the other constraint, at least in principle, is that the chi comes in, and then it gets captured in, say, the sun. That capture rate is going to be determined, again, by this coupling of the dark matter to the proton now, mostly in the sun, and because there's lots of hydrogen. And so this thing captures, and then it annihilates. And then you can look for the neutrinos. Now, typically, when people quote, when Ice Cube, for example, quotes the bounds on the neutrinos, there's a big question about what is the energy of the neutrinos, because what are the annihilation products of the dark matter, right? So if you have annihilation products that give you relatively hard neutrinos, that's easy for the Ice Cube to see. If it gives you relatively soft neutrinos, say you go to BB bar, that gives you relatively softer neutrinos, it's harder for Ice Cube to see, and the limits are correspondingly worse. Here, because it's a very prescribed theory, right, it's going through the Z, I know as a function of the mass exactly what it goes to, and as long as it's above basically the W mass, is going to either W's and then eventually to top quarks. And those are all relatively hard neutrinos. And so there's actually reasonably strong bounds coming from the Ice Cube, which we'll see in a second. Another possibility is the analog of what you were saying for the Higgs. Of course, you have for the Z, you can have invisible decays, which, you know, the width has to be less than something like 2 MeV. And so we can start to ask where these constraints are living. And so this is what you were asking for. So the invisible width would be important at the low masses. Ice Cube is something looking like this. And Panda X, this actually, I think, is maybe been improved by a factor of two or so since I made this plot. So it's sitting something like here. And so the zeroth order statement is that I've excluded essentially everything except for being right on the peak or potentially very high mass.
Your peak is the shape right? I mean, it's usually, it's skewed, right, by thermal effects to the left, and it's going straight up or to the right, right? Because when say if you just below MZ over Q, right?
Yes.
There are thermal effects that bring you,
can put you back on.
Resonance. So
this is true.
Usually, so I was just wondering if this is plotted with that effect.
Yes, this is plotted with that effect included, yeah.
So it's just difficult to see.
Yeah, but it's certainly included, yes. Okay, now there's another constraint which comes a bit to your point, but something you should definitely be worried about. So there's actually two things you might worry about for this model. One is a question of the UV completion. Another question, which we'll get to in a second, is whether it's really even valid as an EFT. And we'll see that at least as you get to the higher masses, that's even starting to be slightly questionable. And then there's another contribution, which is the contribution to the T parameter, which is very much related to this question of the UV completion. So if I do the stupidest thing I could possibly imagine and just put down this operator, and then I start trying to calculate loops, right? I have some coupling, which is, I have dark matter coupling to this, right? So I can imagine having a loop of the dark matter, and then I get this twice, and that has a name, that's the rho parameter, right? So that's what I would get, and it's going to be a total disaster. And in fact, it's divergent, and the reason it's divergent is not a surprise. The reason
it's good, because then it's if it would be convergent, so divergent quadratically or something on the scale lambda, then you in uncontrolled, right? So anything else?
Yes. Yeah, so even the fact that it's logarithmically divergent, of course, is a signal of the fact that we've essentially. So remember, what is the T parameter? What is the rho parameter? It's essentially a measure of how much you're causing the splitting in the doublets, right? And here we're having something that couples to the Z, and it is neutral, right? And the coupling of the Z is like the T3 minus the Q sine squared theta weak. The Q is zero, so it's T3, right? So you're wanting this thing to couple to something that has the isospin, but you have noticed that when I draw that loop, there's only a neutral guy running in the loop. There is no charged guy running in the loop. And that's the reason for the divergence, is I've thrown away essentially the rest of that SU2 multiplet. And we'll come back to that in a second. So the reason that this is large, roughly, another way of saying the same thing that I just said, is that when you compute the T parameter, the rho parameter, you're looking at the contributions to the W self energy and then also to the Z self energy. And here, essentially, there's a contribution to the Z self energy, but no corresponding contribution to the W self energy. And so let's just, for the moment, take that seriously and ask, what do those constraints look like? And so if I take the T parameter at face value, this is something that I would get is a bound, like everything to the upper right of that is excluded. And so that looks like nominally that excludes everything. If instead I allow a T parameter to be a bit larger, then I get a weaker constraint in principle. And why would I even want to entertain this possibility? Well, one reason I might want to entertain this possibility is, after all, this is just an EFT effective theory. And you know, if I'm starting to write down operators suppressed by lambda, I could also, in principle, just write down the rho parameter suppressed by lambda. And you could fine tune them against one another. So you can think about one way to interpret this curve is if I allow sort of a 10% tuning between different contributions in my EFT. That's one way to think about it. But very roughly, this is telling you sort of the going rate. This is the size of the contribution that I get just from this thing. And if you're willing to buy a little bit of cancellation, then you could have something that looks like this. But this is already looking pretty bad, right? So very roughly, if you take this seriously, we've essentially excluded everything. Even if you take this thing, then it looks like there's some tiny window here where the mass is bigger than, say, 150, and then if this gets a little stronger, maybe it's even a little higher, 200, maybe going up to 750 or something like that. But this this whole discussion of the T parameter motivates us actually including additional states, right? Because we would say, all right, the reason I got into trouble is I had contributions to the Z self energy, but not the W. So I know how to fix that. I just put in the charge states to go along for the ride. But the minute I do that, right, so that's saying I have this contribution going to my rho parameter, and that's canceling the other guy, then I can cut this line right here, and that looks like this, right? That's dark matter, exchanging a charge partner going to WW. And so if I'm doing this to fix the rho parameter, my expectation is, at least in principle, I've also altered the cosmology, right? So that's so then you should ask, okay, well, now I'm altering the cosmology, so how does that change the story? All right, so before I come to that point, let me just make this final final point, which is the validity of the EFT, which is you could sort of ask, what's the size of that coefficient that I would need to put in there? Given the fact that the lambda needs to be at minimum something like twice the mass of the dark matter mass, need to even talk about this story. And if you don't want that C to be bigger than one, you need to be living sort of down here to the left. So also for the very highest masses, you're in danger of this not even being a valid EFT. So for both of these reasons, the fact that I would like to have a valid EFT and the fact that I want to start incorporating the charge states, those arguments say, well, maybe the story that I should have had was I should have started off with the theory that had the charge states in it, and that's called the singlet doublet model. So that's this model right here, where you write down a doublet D. So you could think about this as like a heavy lepton, and a singlet, which I've called N, and then that couples to the Higgs boson, and this is like the I sigma 2H. And then these guys have Dirac masses, and then there's additionally this D is vector-like, right? So there's a D and essentially a D bar. And then there's a Majorana mass for this guy. And so if you are a Suzy person, you just say, okay, this is the Higgsino-Beno sector where I've thrown away the Wino. This is essentially the, so as I said, it's like the similar Beno Higgs Urbino sector of the MSM without all the pesky symmetry, right? So the difference.
Is it a violation in this?
We'll come to that a little bit later. So in principle, there is a physical phase in this model, which for the first part of the story, I'm going to set to zero. But I think I have one slide that talks about the possibility if you do allow the CP violation, it could change the story a little bit and can lead to interesting values of the EDM.
Even for the if you just flip CP, right? The phase is go on. You can sometimes can change like S wave to P wave.
Oh yes, yeah. So there is there.
Yeah.
No, I got it. So he's saying. In principle, if you have the CP violation, then in principle that can change the cosmology in a significant way, and that's in fact true. There's couplings through the Higgs, for example, that are P wave. That if you have the CP violation, that coupling to the Higgs now can support an S wave, and so that can change the cosmology by a lot. So in fact, I have one slide on that at the end, but for the first story, I'll tell you is without that. Okay, so if you analyze this guy, so the lightest of these, the lightest neutral guy here is going to be our dark matter, and it's going to inherit couplings both to the Higgs and to the Z, and one of the amusing things is that this approximately unifies, just like in Split-Suzy, all the heavy lifting and supersymmetry that gets you the unification of the couplings is basically coming from the Higgs-enos. The gauge-enos don't do very much, and nor do the extra scalars, because those all come in complete SU5 multiplets. And so this very nearly unifies. And so let's talk about this story. So one thing that we're going to talk about is the existence of a blind spot. Now, this blind spot really is a tuning at the level that I'm going to talk about it, at least initially. So what do I mean by the blind spot? What I mean is that there is a particular choice of once I specify, okay, so remember there are two Yukawa couplings, right? There's a Y, what I call Y and YC, and then there are two masses. And
question.
Yes.
Why this new permions, I guess? Why don't they couple to W and Z?
They will. So these will couple to the W and the Z, which is,
why
I mean.
Why are they not easily visible?
Oh, because they're, they're heavier than the half the mass of the Z, right? So these are things that in principle you can look for at the LHC. The bounds on them at the moment are typically pretty weak because they're only produced via electroweak interactions and not via strong interactions. Unlike in, say, some Suzy theories where you might have a gluino or a squark that would cascade decay down to these guys, so those guys are strongly produced, and then they would cascade to these lighter states and be produced in perhaps association with Ws and Zs. Here, there's no strong states that are being introduced, and so you can only make these via electroweak production, and the bounds are typically quite weak. They exist, but they tend to be pretty weak. All right, so this blind spot is the statement that for a particular choice of M, N, and the Yukawa coupling, you can choose the other Yukawa coupling so that the coupling to the Higgs vanishes. And so this is the particular relationship. And I mean, if you want, you can find this via a low energy theorem where you basically say that this guy, this mass is a function of the electroweak VeV. And you can find this place where this vanishes, and that gives you a vanishing coupling to the Higgs. And so the idea would be that we're going to basically try to turn off this coupling here and then ask what the story is going to be here. So why am I'm going to completely turn off that coupling, and then I'll go back to the situation where it's turned on a little bit. And so why do I want to turn it off at all? The reason I want to,
exactly.
Yeah. So the reason I want to turn it off is the fact that we know that the bounds from the chi-chi Higgs were very strong,
that
right?
That depends on the mass, right? Are they still excluded for that parameter space?
If you're doing this story, and that's setting your relic abundance,
yeah.
That's excluded up to many hundreds of GeV.
Okay.
So I'm going to imagine that this coupling is at least somewhat small because I am close to that blind spot.
How small do you know? How big is your tuning?
Yeah, so I'll show you some pictures in just a second. But for the moment, as an idealized case, let's imagine that coupling is exactly zero. So I've tuned it exactly, but just to answer your question a little bit ahead of time, it's sort of roughly like a little bit better than a part in 10% tuning or so. I mean, it also depends on a little bit what your metric is in the tuning, right? So you could—
It also depends on what the mass is, because in principle—
It also depends on what the mass is, of course, yeah. All right, so now the other point of this model, which we talked about, is now there's gonna be charge states, right? Because these guys were coming from doublets, and so there's gonna be diagrams that look like this, where I annihilate to W bosons, and there's no tree-level direct detection analog for that. So if this is relevant for setting the relic density, then there's no obvious, at least at the tree level, direct detection story. And similarly, now you also can have co-annihilation between the dark matter and a charge state and via W in the early universe, and there's also no tree level direct detection analog for that story. Okay, so.
You want to have it this light.
So there's a couple of, here's a very light case and here's a less light case. Let's focus on the less light case. The main feature here is that, so this is the spin dependent cross section versus the spin independent cross section. And you can see that there is a plateau and there is a plateau and then it curves around and then there's a bunch of fuzz, right? And the plateau here where the spin dependent coupling is a particular value is where you're going through the Z to get the right relic abundance. And so there's some very particular value that you need in order to get the right relic abundance since you're going through the Z. And that's gonna tell you what also the spin dependent cross section off of protons is, right? So that's the usual crossing symmetry, annihilation related to the direct detection. Now this is the crossing symmetry that's associated with the with going through the Higgs rather than through the Z. So here's the Z crossing symmetry, here's the Higgs crossing symmetry, and this fuzz, these are going to correspond to the cases where these other diagrams are very important.
And you see the way you go through the Higgs, there is like a white band.
Good.
That's because you're close to a resonance, so you can tune down the couplings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry. So there's a couple of stories here. Sorry. The colors did not come out very well on the screen. So there's two things.
No, yes, you cannot see the gray. Okay.
Yeah, so what this is supposed to be showing is that, so there's another band here,
right, okay.
Which is for the lighter masses, and that's what this white thing is looking like. And the gray, as opposed to the color, is telling you I am marching along this way as my direct detection experiments get better and better, and so I am excluding lower and lower values of the spin-independent cross-section. And this is actually a bit old, so this is another way to answer your question, right? So you might say, like, okay, what's the going rate for annihilation through the Higgs, right? So if I wanted to get it important if it was setting my cosmology, here's the answer, right? And here was already the bound in 2011 was sitting something like this, right? And so then now it's gonna be better by a little bit more than an order of magnitude. So it's gonna be sitting something like here.
I see. So by the way, the range of the masses for the gray and light gray, what is the difference? Because you have four colors and there is only, so the mass.
Right, so again, this was, so this is if the dark matter is in this range,
yeah,
I get this band.
Ah, okay.
And if the dark matter is in this range, then I get this band. And why do I get different plateaus? It's exactly this TT bar story, right?
Yes.
So if I don't have the TT bar, then I need to have a much bigger spin. I need to have a bigger coupling to get the efficient annihilation.
Yeah.
And so then the minute I open up that TT bar channel, I can get away with the smaller coupling.
And the gray is what is excluded. That's why there's a different color.
Correct. Yes. So direct detection, right, is marching down and spin independent, and it's also marching down in this direction.
Okay.
And it's marching down in this direction, And at this point, at this time, some of this was not yet excluded, but now I suspect that much of that is excluded. And part of what I'm trying to I'm going to try and show you is that we're getting really close to this plateau right here too, right? So, so the zeroth order. Okay, so let me just show you that.
Story. Also, one more thing.
Yeah.
If you have such a small coupling to the Higgs, what happens to the charged states? How split are they from the neutral states?
Yeah. So we can. I will show you a plot that shows you exactly this for you in a second.
Okay.
So, okay. So this is another way of talking about some of this tuning, if you want. Right. So this is a plot as a function of so this other Yukawa coupling, right? And so what I said is there's for a choice of the MN, the MD, and the one Yukawa coupling, I can change this other Yukawa coupling, and there's going to be some particular choice of it where there's going to be a blind spot. And so what we've plotted here are a couple of different things, right? So one is the cross sections of the direct detection, and the other is the relic density. So this is a particular case where this is roughly the right relic density is here. And you can see that there's a place where the coupling to the Higgs basically goes to zero. There's also a place where the coupling to the Z goes to zero.
They're not on top of each other.
They're not on top of each other in general. There is the so-called double blind spot, which we could talk about in just a second.
There's a double blind
spot. There is, in fact, a double blind spot. But in general, they're not in the same place. And so this is to say, like, well, if I don't want to have a big spin-independent cross-section, that's possible, right? It means I need to be somewhat close to this particular value. And that can give me a big suppression, right? You can see it goes down by many orders of magnitude. And in the spin-independent coupling, but as long as I'm using the Z for my annihilation, I can still get the right value of the relic density. But the amount... I mean, this gives you some clue as to sort of the amount of tuning you're trying to do. I mean, it just goes like the coupling squared to kill the cross-section, right? So if you want the, but if you want to think about it in terms of a fundamental parameter, there's going to be some particular value where it's exactly zero, and you need to be reasonably close to that. All right, so the question I wanted to ask is, well, we know that it's at least a possibility that this coupling could be small and I can still get the right cosmology. And in that case, I would expect the annihilation through the Z to be somewhat large. And so that's like the picture we just showed. And then the question we should ask is, do we expect to see it through the spin-dependent scattering, and do we expect to see it soon? All right, so here, again, the colors are not coming out awesome. I apologize for that, but I'll...
It's not your fault, it's the projector's fault.
Okay, so,
oh,
so here...
You can't see the gray.
Yeah, you can't see the gray. Okay, well, anyway,
you
can't see any of the colors. All right. So,
you can lift your laptop and show
us. We'll try. So first, we've decided that it's a thermal relic. We've decided that we're in the blind spot. So I had four free parameters, right? There was like the two masses, the MD, the MN, and there's the two Yukawa couplings. I'm going to fix the thermal relic and fix that I'm in the blind spot. That fixes two of the parameters, so I can plot it in a plane. All right, and so now I've plotted it in the plane. The two remaining parameters I'm going to use are the physical mass of the dark matter and the other Yukawa coupling. Okay, and then these blue curves are the masses of the charged state.
Oh.
Right, so here the coupling of the coupling to the Higgs is zero, but the Yukawa couplings themselves need not be zero, right? So you can still, in principle, have differences, right? So here you have a neutral state that's 400, where the charge state is 500, because I still have an appreciable Yukawa coupling in that particular case. Okay, so this is what the and this red region is the current bound coming from the Panda X experiment, roughly. It's actually maybe a little bit stronger than that now, but there is some bound that's just this little bit here. And so this is saying that in principle, I could have a 250 GeV WIMP that has a perfectly fine thermal history, that goes through the Z, sets the right relic abundance, and is not yet excluded by the direct detection. However, here's the xenon one-ton projection and the LZ projection. And so what will happen is this little red region is going to go all the way over to here, so all of this will be excluded. So this is to say, so the take-home message should be, hey, you know, the spin-dependent story by itself has not yet excluded the possibility of this Z-mediated dark matter, but after you get to sort of one-ton scale things, it's going to really cut into the parameter space. And if you look over here, right, so this is a 400 GeV charge state, and you could ask, you know, so what's happening here, right? So this is a 400 GeV charge state. This is the 400 GeV neutral state. So here, this is like a 385 neutral guy, 400 GeV charge guy. So this is co-annihilation, right? So the reason that you could get the right relic density here while still surviving the constraints from the spin-dependent coupling is that now you can actually even turn off the coupling to the Z and still be okay, because now you're annihilating through the W. And so that will be the thing that will be left over in the asymptotic future of direct detection.
You have to put any collider constraints on here. Are there any collider
constraints? So the collider constraints turn out to be quite weak. So the reason for that is, so the LHC does do searches for, if you like, Higgsinos or Wienos, electroweak produced neutralinos.
Yeah.
They strangely tend to quote them for things that are produced with the cross section of a Wieno, but which tends to be a bit larger than the production of the Higgsino. The collider constraint.
I thought the Wieno searches, though, also assume that a very specific splitting between the charge states, which is very small, is the displaced vertex.
Right. So here the splitting can be, I mean, you could see the splitting, at least in principle, could be a little bit bigger.
You have bigger, more visible energy in the decay.
But not a lot, right? So we're still talking about, tens of GeV, or in some cases a bit more. So the LHC bounds are. They exist, and I'm sorry I didn't show them on here, but they tend to be pretty weak. I think they were worse than the Panda X.
Okay.
So the other region which you can't see, which is gray, is something like here. And it turns out that if you looked at the thermal history over here, it's pretty well modeled by the Z annihilation. So this is just to say, you know, the models that we're excluding now and will be for the near future in direct detection, are basically like that model that I was starting off with when I was saying you're just annihilating through a Z. So that's the right cosmology, but this has A, an okay rho parameter, B, a UV completion, and C, targets, which is things at the LHC that in principle you can go look for. Okay, so now let's ask, this goes to your question, you know, how tuned is the tuning, right? And so this is roughly the answer. So if you define your delta YC in this way, right, this is, you know, I had to pick, there's a blind spot value, this is how close I am to that. And you can see, if I want these bounds to be roughly comparable today, then this is the value that I need. So it depends on if you feel like I'm tuning it. If you think the answer is I have to pick some number between 0 and 1, then you would say, oh, the number has to be
0.3 is not that.
You know, it has to be, this is saying it has to be within 30% of the value that you need, right? And so if, yeah. So anyway, that's the current statement. So there is a so-called double blind spot. This is a spot where both the spin independent and spin dependent vanish. If you require these two couplings to vanish along with producing the thermal abundance, it turns out this is a point of Y equals YC is the place where the spin dependent vanishes. It's basically, there's a custodial symmetry. And then furthermore, MN equals MD equals 850 will give you the right thermal abundance. And that is a sad place where life could be true. But why, there's no, if you're asking what's the symmetry that will give you Mn equals Md, there a priori is none, right? Because these guys actually, in fact, have different quantum numbers. So it's not easy to engineer such a symmetry. The one thing I thought about a little bit, if you were trying to model build, you could try to make the Mn secretly be part of like some sort of twin sector, and then there could be some discrete symmetry between the two. The models that I came up with were sufficiently ugly that I thought they were it was not nearly as nice as just having a pure Higgs-Eno. So this is the another possibility. All right. I'm going to have to speed up on if we're going to get, maybe we won't get through everything. That's fine too. All right, so what about the pure Higgs-Eno case? So this is another possibility, right? So some people here know this very well. So another possibility, at least in principle, is that I could start off with a basically a Beano Higgs-Eno admixture, and then I could take the M2 to infinity. And if the mu is living at around a TeV or so, that in principle can give me a perfectly good relic abundance, and then in principle I can have a very, very small direct detection cross-section. So that's another possibility. And now I want to come back to Maxime's question about the CP violation. So if you have the CP violation, then in principle you can have this coupling, which is exactly the story we were talking about. And then the interesting statement is that you get the EDMs. And if you want to have this coupling to be sufficiently large that you're doing interesting things, then the EDMs turn out to be in this sort of 10 to the minus 29 level.
It doesn't have to be just the WW, right? It could be.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch. Yeah. No, there's a ton of these diagrams. Yes. So they're all two-loop though, because they all are, yeah. Okay, so they're all gauge or Higgs bosons talking to these states, right? So, but very roughly, you get things that are of order this 10 to the minus 29.
You have QQ bar there. This is the neutron EDM that you're showing, or the electron EDM? Because there should be.
I don't know why I have the QQ bar there. I suspect I had it for the purposes. Sorry, it's the EDM, which is the electron EDM that is relevant. But I think I had this here for the purpose of the cosmology story.
Oh, okay.
So that's, I think that's why what I was thinking when I made this slide. Sorry. Okay, so we got 10 minutes. So just to conclude, give you the take-home message from this part of the story. Higgs mediation is already quite constrained. So if you're trying to get the right relic abundance going through the Higgs, that's not so good. But you can imagine that coupling is accidentally small, about the one sort of like a 10%-ish tuning is what you need. Then you need to have some other way to get the right relic abundance. The most natural way to do that is through the Z. And that's like what's being probed right now. The other possibility for sure is that you could imagine having the CP violation and then you should see it in the EDMs. And then the other thing, which is the sad story that I know other people here have worked on, is that it could just be sort of pure Higgs-Eno, one TeV. That could happen too.
What about, have you looked at the indirect detection things?
For what?
For the singlet, for any of these cases.
Oh, for you mean indirect, like for ice cube-ish or stuff? Or
even ice cube or... because if in particular in the case where everything's decoupled, it's like pure Higgs-Eno, there's the photon line, right? That you get from
like CTA, like in the infinite future.
Like, have you looked at these things? What is the status now?
Because at the moment, I think it's.
You remember long time ago.
Yes. Yes, we did think about this a long time ago, but I think that at the moment, the bounds are quite weak. I mean, the very, very roughly, I mean, these kinds of bounds tend to constrain things that are thermal relics that are, you know, like 20 GeV or something. And then as they get heavier, it tends to get worse.
From
like galactic center kinds of things.
Yeah, but what about the line?
So the line is typically pretty small for these kinds of cases.
Yeah, it's slowed down.
So I don't.
It's very distinctive, right?
I mean, in the limit of infinite resolution, it's very distinctive, right? But I, my, My understanding is that maybe CTA, maybe.
Maybe.
And that's like for the heavy guys, right? Not for
the light guys. I'm talking about
what? For pure hexeno.
Yeah, from pure hexeno.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty borderline, is my understanding.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
A question?
Yeah.
You may have covered the particular model, but I'm not sure. If you considered a model in which you, to the standard model, you just add a singlet.
Yes.
That is neutral under SU2 cross U1.
But is a scalar or?
Just a scalar.
Yes.
Just a scalar.
Yep.
So therefore it would interact only through the Higgs.
Yes.
By mixing the Higgs after spontaneous.
Yes.
What is the status of a model like that?
The status of that model is it's pretty constrained. Also from the direct detection point of view, as I remember, the only point where you can sort of barely survive is where the mass of your singlet is very close to the half the mass of the Higgs.
Oh, but also above a TV or something.
Or very heavy, yes. Yeah. You actually know this very well. Right? So, so if you're very heavy or if you're right on resonance, those are the two places.
What are the chances of being able to detect that kind of dark matter?
I mean, it depends on depends on how tuned you are to the
bullet, right? You keep improving, and if you don't see the signal, you're eventually, I guess, you're going to rule out.
No, but can you?
I mean, it's sort of this story, right? It's something kind of like this, right? Where there's going to be some dip like this.
Yes.
And so there's some analogous story for now you replace this with your singlet and you could be living kind of right here. And so you have to work really hard to try to completely kill that. But you would think, wow, it's a really amazing coincidence that this thing weighs 62.51 GeV.
So that's the case of about half of the mass.
Yeah, the Higgs,
if
yeah.
The half of the mass, then when you annihilate, you're right on resonance. So you can tune down the coupling. So that you because what you are keep fixed is the annihilation cross section that in the early universe. So if you're close to resonance, you can live with a much smaller coupling, which suppresses direct detection.
So this is a quartic coupling you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. But it's still even though it's quartic, once the Higgs is in condensate state, there is a trilinear coupling. Right. The actual physical there is a resonant process.
Through that one. Okay.
Right. Okay. So there is a resonant process.
Yes. Okay. So I have another story, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I think I'll just kind of present the results from that very quickly. But I'll outline the story and then I'll tell you the results. I will go through it relatively quickly. So. We saw already in the case of the singlet doublet model, one of the ways that you could survive increasingly stringent direct detection bounds is if co-annihilation is important. So if you have dark matter and some other random particle that simultaneously inhabits a thermal bath, it frees out, then it's not just this process that is important, but rather as these processes can go to the standard model or this can go to the standard model. So the rough idea that I like to think about it is I have some bucket of X, some bucket of Y. I have some pipe that goes between the two of them. I have holes in the buckets, right? And then if there's a hole in this bucket, then I can still get rid of the dark matter by going into this bucket, right? So this is the rough idea. And the mass of these two states cannot be too different, right? Because you want the Boltzmann suppression for this guy to be not too large at the time you're trying to get rid of your dark matter. All right, so let me talk to you very briefly about this in the context of the MSSM. Sort of again, I don't necessarily think that the MSSM itself has to be the theory of the universe here, but I think this, just like I was talking about WIMP with a capital W, and I wanted to really try to understand what's the current status, like, we know Higgs is bad. You can go through the Z. When will we see the Z? We'll see it very soon. So now I want to say, well, what if we have a co-annihilation story? I'm going to do this in the context of the MSSM. What is the expectation for the direct detection in this particular story. So I'll try.
This must have been done to death already. Right?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, so people have talked about the MSSM, of course, for 20 years, right? So the co-annihilation is 20 years. So yes, you're right, MSSM has been 30, right? But co-annihilation is probably 20. And so what I want to do is, many of those co-annihilation stories, that you pick your favorite M01, M1 half plane, and then you...
It's not my favorite.
It's not my favorite either, right? Yes. And that's exactly my point, right? So people pick some values up at the M-gut scale, they run things down, and then they say, look, okay, this is giving me the right cosmology, but I can't learn anything from that.
I need some of these people.
Yes. So to avoid that, and to help me at least understand what is the relevant physics for setting the cosmology in the direct detection, I'm going to focus more on the low energy part of the story rather than, you know, picking some random boundary conditions. So what I am imagining, the picture is the standard model is relatively light. The dark matter in the stop, that's going to be doing the co-annihilation. And then there's going to be, has to be a second stop and a spottom to fill out the rest of the third generation. So this is the left-handed spottom in particular. And then I'm going to imagine the rest of the superpartners are heavier, right? So this is sort of the module that I have that's giving me the cosmology in the direct detection. And so we'll see what the story is, right? So there's a bunch of bounds. Now I have actually do have a colored state. And so I have to ask, what are the bounds coming from the direct searches for the stop. And the thing that's sort of interesting is that this is the case, and I'll be a little bit more quantitative about this in a minute, but you would expect the splitting to be relatively small, right? So the bounds that you say, oh, the stop has to be at least, you know, 800, 900 GeV or something, that's in the case where you have big splittings between the LSP and the stop. We want to be living over here where the splittings are quite small. And so it's okay to have a stop that's quite a bit lighter. Now, for the direct detection part of the story, now what's going to be important are all of these loop diagrams, right? So the loop diagrams are going to be the things that are relevant. The dark matter comes in. It could talk to a top and a stop, and then that can talk to a Higgs. Diagrams like this, and then also these box diagrams.
What about changes in the, if your stop is so light, what about changes in the Higgs couplings? And also, haven't people, I mean, given that people have thought about it for so long, can they find a symmetry reason why these two are so close by? There is no reason. In the previous case, right, there was SU2 that was telling you the charge state has to be close to the
Higgs. At least in the Higgsino case, right?
Yes,
or the Wino case,
yeah. Why is the stop so close to the neutralino?
This is a good question. I mean, people have thought about, I mean, you people have various models, right? So one, not in SUSY, right? But in like a UED type model, everything's 1/r and then you compute corrections, right?
Oh, okay, there.
Right, so that's an idea.
Yeah.
Actually with Jack, we had some crazy models where we tried to do this via RG focusing, where they were actually degenerate.
It's not because the stop wants to be, if you take RG, the stop wants to be as light as the gluino, and then the other.
That was not in an MSSM story. That was some other. That was some other story.
So there was a fixed point in the RG.
Yeah. So we just constructed a model where the charges were such that you had two states, one that was charged and one that was the dark matter, and then at the fixed point of the RG, these guys would actually be degenerate.
So
it's a motivation for co-annihilation, which is not just they're all part of a multiplet, but it doesn't answer the question for the MSSM.
For the MSSM,
yeah. Okay, so there's these loop-induced couplings, and this was the plot that people were showing in this snow mass thing, and the thing that I want to point out is this crazy, whatever that is, a hexagon. Right, here's this hexagon that people are talking about for Beano stop co-annihilation. So tantalizingly close to LZ, right? And so right on top. So there we go. We should be able to test this. So I wanted to understand if there was some simple way to understand this value of this cross-section. So what do we really mean? Is this really a reasonable expectation for one of these stop co-annihilation stories, right? So that's what I wanted to know. And let me just, given the time, I will skip all of this nonsense and tell you the sad story. And you can ask me questions about the details later if you want. Sorry, it's a very ugly plot, but the rough story is that once I impose the, so I can do two things. So one is, this is relevant to your question, Mina. So one is I can say I don't want to screw up things like the Higgs couplings.
Yeah.
And then if I don't want to do that, then I'm allowed to live in this blue region. The other thing I could do, which is in principle a much stronger constraint, is to say that I actually want to get the Higgs mass right.
Oh.
Right? And so if I want...
But you're assuming you are in SUSY.
So that's, I'm assuming that I'm in SUSY, right? And that you, so there is a prediction from the MSSM.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that, then that's the green points.
Are you assuming that you're actually in the large A-term limit?
Well, this is the question, right? So I'm not assuming anything. I'm looking at all possibilities, but you might think that having a large A-term would be good for direct detection,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because there is this coupling here which goes like the A-term.
Yeah.
Right? So you might say, oh, you know, I want to have a nice coupling that I could see at direct detection, so I'm going to try and increase the A-term.
Yeah.
And but it turns out, you know, there's a best value for the A-term to get the Higgs mass, right?
Yeah.
There's that, once you get too big, then it actually goes back down again. And this actually tends to be, I mean, that's the reason that you could get blue points that are better than the green points,
yeah,
which is here the Higgs mass is not high enough because the A-term is too big. So you could get, if you have the A-term being bigger, you could maybe go up to these blue values. But if you want to reproduce the Higgs mass, then you have something more like these green values. And you can see here's the neutrino bound, right? So this is the neutrino floor, again, just for as a point of orientation here.
It's a floor from what? From boron 8?
This is over here, this floor, right?
So,
yeah, I wish the boron 8, right? So we're talking about out here, right? Because we're talking about a few hundred GeV. And so if you, that's, you're not going to see that, right? And so that's kind of my point here. The takeaway is that this thing is a total fake. The reason it's a total fake is what they were imagining was... they were imagining, so there's here's what I'm saying is the, what I'm going to call, say, like the irreducible contribution to direct detection, right? So I have some cosmology story that's set up by the fact that I'm co-annihilating in the early universe. So that tells me something about the stop and the neutralino sector, because I need to get the cosmology right. And so that allows me to make a prediction for what the direct detection is, relying only on this sector. Now, of course, there is some other diagram, right, which is the Beano-Higgsino-Higgs diagram, which in principle, this coupling can be small, so it has nothing to do with the cosmology, but it could still be the dominant contribution to the direct detection.
I see.
And that's what's going on with this hexagon.
Really?
Yeah. So this
ridiculous.
Is just some, yeah. I agree, it's ridiculous, right? So this is some particular choice of mu, right? So this coupling goes like mz over mu. Right, and so you could decide how big you want mu to be, and so this is a point where the cosmology is absolutely stop co-annihilation, but the direct detection is actually not stop co-annihilation. The direct detection is some leftover Beano-Higgsino thing.
So you would, in fact, like.
So I would put it down here or something.
Right.
Yeah, and so.
Or anywhere from that point.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I mean, it's, yeah. So it's really the right story is it could be here, right? It could be anywhere from here to here, and I mean, it's actually some big region that's like this, right? It's some, and you can decide how heavy mu is. The answer is that, you know, you might like it to be light for tuning reasons or something. But if your only motivation is cosmology, then you have no guarantees of seeing the direct detection, which I think is important for people to realize.
Yeah, it's pretty, yeah. It's not even that.
And so, yeah, just to be somewhat precise about this point, so it's possible there could be some Higgsino in the dark matter, in which case direct detection could be there. It just would have nothing to do with the cosmology. So this is the quantitative way to say that. So you could choose what mu is, 10 to the minus 47. That's something that in principle you could see, but you know, mu doesn't have to be as low as a TeV. It could be heavier, in which case you're in trouble. All right, so I'm happy to talk more about some details if people are interested, but given the time, let me just conclude. So this Higgs-centric cosmology, if you're annihilating through the Higgs boson, that's, I'd say, already quite squeezed. The Z-centric cosmology, where this is setting your abundance, I'd say that's interesting right now, right? So if I were Elena or someone on one of these direct detection experiments, I mean, this is the thing that I would be excited about, is I would say...
Spin-dependent.
Is the spin-dependent thing. I think that's the thing that they're really probing right now.
Is the COOP next generation going to be much better or not? Because trying to scale up, right?
So yeah, actually, I don't remember the Pico. Yeah, it's called Pico now, right? So I think that's 250. I mean, it's kilograms. I think I don't remember, to be honest. But the it really depends on your model, what you think the ratio of the couplings to the proton to the neutron is, right? So for the particular case of the Z...
mediation, there is no...
So there's no model dependence there. And if this is the right number, then I still think xenon wins for the particular ratio of proton to neutron for the Z. If you have some other model that is some other mediator, of course, you can say some other story. But I think for the particular case of the Z, the xenon experiments are going to win. Okay, now the thing which, as far as I know, there's no symmetry reason that we should be in this blind spot, so it's just a tuning, right? So that's the thing you have to sort of swallow to be in this story to begin with, is that that coupling to the Higgs is just accidentally a bit small. This co-annihilation story, be it the stop or otherwise, I don't see why there's any guarantee we get to see anything anytime soon or into the foreseeable future. So that's something we just have to be aware of. And then this is the paper that I was telling you about the RG focusing, right? So yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, if we kill all of this stuff and you still want to entertain the WIMP, then you should be thinking about co-annihilation. So it could be pure Higgsinos, but it could be something else. But then you would like to understand what's the reason for the degeneracy. And as you say, it could all be because they're part of a SU2 doublet, right? That's a very simple Higgsinos, I think, for me, will be the going rate, right? That's the thing that I would guess. And then the question is, are there any other reasonable possibilities for why these guys should be approximately degenerate? And I think particularly once we kill this, if you do want to think about WIMPs, that's the thing you should be thinking about, is why they should be degenerate. All right, so I'll stop there. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Had a lot of questions.
That's okay, it's good.
Two or three quick questions. Need to ask it all.
I'm gonna put this down before I hurt myself.
Yeah, that was very dangerous.
Anyway, all right. Let's thank the speaker.